Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you're listening. I'm Bob Zimmerman with Zach McLeod here, tech support slash producer Will Stevens. I'm here on Backfield Banter. Season two, Zach.
Season two, baby.
Day one of season two. Here we go. We got a special guest. We've got Todd Clawson, the founder of Inside Edge Baseball Academy and Lee Summit here in the Kansas City area. Long time, big league career as a strength conditioning coach. Was 7 years with the Dodgers.
7 years.
So 7 years with the Dodgers and with Tampa as the minor league strength conditioning coordinator. Before them.
Two. And then 1 year I was just I was a strength conditioning guy. Okay. So 3 years there total.
Perfect. So a lot of experience, and I've known you now for we're going on 8 years. And one thing about Todd, and he's one of the most humble guys, and it takes a lot of digging to find out all the knowledge that you have and how much big league experience you've had in your career. But yeah, you've been a lot of guys, and we were talking about some of them earlier. I mean, right now you've got three managers that you were trained with when you were with the Dodgers. Dave Roberts, Craig Counsell, and
Alex Cora,
yeah. And so all three pretty good managers and pretty good baseball guys to have been around. How were they as
they were
players?
Awesome, and you could tell kind of that you know, if they wanted to, they were kind of the baseball. Yeah, they were a step ahead. Definitely, you know, Counsell was an infielder, Cora was an infielder, and Cora, you know, is. Grew up with his brother playing, you know, he's just a baseball rat, and you just kind of knew. And I'm a student of the game, and so I would, you know, I was able to be around them every day, and I'd always pick their brain, and I got to, you know, get a little nugget from time to time. You could tell those guys were going to be, you know, could be managers. Same with, like, Robin Ventura ended up being a manager. David Ross was a manager in the big leagues also, all those guys. So You could tell, like, they just kind of stuck out in a different light as far as baseball IQ. Great guys.
Yeah, that's kind of cool that all those guys came from that, you know, that team in that era, and they're all very successful as managers now. And I feel like in a lot of sports, it's kind of like that. You have those groups of guys that are together, and then they kind of branch off, and it's always success away as you go. I wanted to bring you on to talk about your story and, like, kind of, I know you grew up like a mile from me in St. Louis. We never knew each other back then, but small world brings us back together here in Kansas City. Went to Parkway Central, correct,
St.
Louis?
Went to Parkway Central. After Parkway Central, I went to CMSU, now it's UCM, and went there to play baseball. Unfortunately, that ended pretty fast. I got in a car accident, and it kind of took baseball away. But on the positive, I kind of got into, like, rehab, trying to rehab myself, because back then, you know, there wasn't much rehab. There was, you know, you had athletic trainers, but they kind of hung mostly with the football teams, you know. And I got into strength conditioning and kind of fell in love with it. I always wanted to be in pro baseball and in the big leagues. And back then, as far as coaching, you had to pretty much have played pro.
Yeah.
And so I kind of found a way in the back door, you know, and I got kind of lucky. I coached high school baseball for two seasons went back to Parkway Central and did that. My old high school coach was really good to me, and then was working at a sports-specific, like, training facility there in St. Louis, and decided to go for baseball and, you know, and work with, you know, try and work with the best, you know, in the world, and I got really lucky. So I got the guy named Ken Crenshaw was the minor league coordinator at the time for the Rays. Back then it was the Devil Rays.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a hold of me and said, would I like to be the strength coach for the Florida State League team? And I decided to go for it. And so my wife and I moved down there, and she kind of supported me. As you know, in A-ball, as a staff guy and as a strength and conditioning guy, there wasn't a lot there, but she took a chance and supported me. And then I got lucky. After that season, there was the major league team came in Tampa, and so Ken got promoted to the big leagues, and then he hired me to be the minor league strength conditioning coordinator to run the minor leagues there in Tampa. And then, I love that. I learned from him and Ron Porterfield and a bunch of guys there. And then I think Ron's with the Dodgers now. And I know Ken's with the Diamondbacks. They're still in the game. But then I got lucky and got called to interview for the major league job for the Dodgers. And actually, I interviewed for the assistant job with the Royals because my wife Jennifer's from here in Kansas City. So thought that might be a good fit, and I was going to get lucky enough to be based out of Kansas City, but I was going to be the assistant. But I interviewed for both those jobs in Naples that year during the GM meetings back in, it would have been 98, right before, and I got lucky, I got offered both. And then Jen and I decided we wanted to go out to LA and give it a shot and do that. And I, you know, just got lucky. I was the first ever strength and conditioning coach for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah.
So yes, yeah. And so I got to hire all the minor league guys. So I brought a bunch of dudes with me that.
So you must have crushed the interview, right?
I got lucky, to be honest. My interview was kind of cool because it was Kevin Malone, who was the GM at the time, Bill Guyvette, who's assistant. Ed Creech was like one of our top scouts. And then it was Davey Johnson, who was going to be the manager, yeah, yeah. And then Tommy Lasorda.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit in awe. 27 at the time. And, big baseball nuts, you know, Davey and then Tommy and... They asked me a few questions, and then Tommy started talking, and I just kind of listened, and then an hour went by, and they said, okay, we'll get a hold of that, and then it just went well. But I got really lucky, and that was the first time I met Tommy, and then Tommy ended up being really good to me and my family,
yeah.
You know, when we were there in L.A., so...
Man, that's a quick ride. It's like, it's, you start talking about baseball and the getting to the big leagues, whether it's a coach, strength conditioning, or a player, like...
2 years up.
Yeah, like the average is probably, 5 years?
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah. So that was a...
Yeah, I got lucky, man. You know, I got lucky. I had really good mentors when I got there. And I just worked hard, you know, yeah. To be honest with you. It was, you know, I'm not the smartest guy, Bobby. So, but I was first one there, last one to leave. Always trying to get as much knowledge, different backgrounds, you know, from different guys, whether it's the baseball guys or the athletic training guys and other strength coaches, and just worked out well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. And then, I mean, I don't know this firsthand, but I'm guessing the players' rapport with you was great.
Yeah, yeah. I got lucky. They're all really cool. We'd sit down right away, and, you know, with the physical, that was, you know, was kind of my opening to, you know, meet everybody. Yeah. I was younger than a lot of guys because, you know, we had a lot of veteran dudes,
yeah.
You know, there. And just kind of in back then, it's different now because everybody understands the science and how important working out is. It was back then, but you did have some older, you know, older school, didn't do too much.
Days.
Yeah, pitched, you know, a little leery with the pitchers and pitching coaches. You had to kind of, you know, pick your spots and, you know, and get it. And then, you know, once you could, you know, work hard for the players and they realized that you were on their side, yeah. To make sure they had the best career they could have, and you cared about them as people, then they were open to letting me in a little bit at a time, and then eventually, hopefully, I could say they trusted me, and then I could implement more of kind of what I wanted to do at the time. Yeah.
So it started off like the eastbound and down, Kenny Powers, like,
it's
hard.
And a few of them blew me up every once in a while, and you just kind of had to wear it back then, you know, and that was okay. You know, I knew my role, and my role I always felt like was to help the players as far as enhancing their performance, but mostly trying to make sure they kept them off the DL and kept them available for the skipper so he can write them in the lineup. But yeah, there was a few that It was like pulling teeth to get them to change. And I respected the routines that a lot of them had because right. they were real successful players. Who was I to come in and say, I want you to do it my way? I never tried that. It wouldn't have worked out very good if I went like that. So
I mean, like, I think that just, like, hits a nail on the head for, like, all of us and what we do. If you're in a collaboration with the player to help them achieve what they want, it's going to work so much better than if you're like, hey, you got to do it this way. I don't care what your goal. If we're going to do it how I want to do it. And that's the reason you were super successful and that, like, you did have those great relationships with those guys.
Well, it's the longer route, too, because eventually, like, you're kind of hinting at, like, you start doing stuff, they start to know who you are, you know, 4, 5, 6 months later, they're going to be way more open to other things that maybe weren't in their routine, where you're like, hey, I've noticed this, I think these couple things would really help you with, you know, the pulled hamstring that you're getting often. You know, what if we work on these things and see if it works?
Yep.
And so I think that's kind of, it's the longer route, and I think it's the route that most coaches would rather not take. Sometimes, especially when you're younger, like you were saying, when you're 27, I know I did things when I was 24, 25, 26, 27. I coached Will when I was 23. I would have done things differently when I was a high school coach.
Sure.
And so I think that stuff's important, where it's like, you know, how I've grown the last few years is just, like you were saying, like sitting down, talking to guys like, hey, what are things that you like to do? What do you feel like to make you successful? And then your job to kind of like incorporate those things and start to introduce the things that, you know, like, I know this is going to help them.
That's it. So you're doing exactly how I did it. I would do it at when they had to get their physicals.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say, what has worked for you? When do you have your best years? Do you want to do that? And then I'd be basically say, let's keep you doing that. If I didn't see you for a couple of days, you give me the green light to come get you. You know, because everybody's eager the first day of spring training. And then they'd be like, yeah, sounds good, man. You know, and then you get the handshake. And if they're, you know, and then, you know, year two was a lot easier because I knew a ton of them. But we were always, every year, you're getting new guys, you know, and new free agents that you signed and new kids that were getting, you know, an opportunity. But the kids coming up, it only took, you know, it didn't take that long to where they were doing our programs, you know, in the minor leagues. And so made it easier, and they just...
it became a system.
It was more of a system, yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to ask is, you said you got there in, like, 99, and you were there through 05. I graduated high school in 10, college in 14. And I would say when I was in college is kind of like when I felt like the strength and conditioning side really started to specify. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not just doing... you know, the football combine workouts, you know, you're not benching, squatting, you know, power cleans, all that stuff started to branch out, like, okay, like, baseball players need to train this way, football players need to train this way, basketball needs to go this way. So what are some of the biggest changes maybe, like, while you were working and, like, what you're seeing now? Because obviously it's changed a lot. You were the very first strength and conditioning coach in 1999, which it feels like there probably should
for the Dodgers. Yeah, I wasn't the first one. Yeah. Dodgers were a little late getting to it,
which is wild because they're ahead of everything.
Yeah, I agree. So. You know, and when I, it was wild because, you know, there was an opportunity there, and it was great too because since they didn't have anybody. When I went in there, I was like, go for the major leagues and I'll build the whole minor leagues.
Yeah.
And so then I got to bring in the guys. As far as the big changes, it's just the science behind it. So it gives you a lot more validity when you talk to somebody as far as, you know, lifts. You know, I don't do the strength conditioning anymore for our academy or, you know, but I watch and learn from those guys. And there's not a ton different than what I was doing back then. I mean, except for the little stigma that some people would say what I thought wasn't great for, you know, a thrower. Turns out I got kind of lucky, you know, and I was okay with what we were doing. But I baby stepped it and just kind of, it grew with time. So, but as far now, I will say there's much as far as, you know, bands and a lot of different different resistant things, and it's great, but it's come so far. And you know, if you're not learning, you're getting passed by. So I'll go ask questions to the guys over at the facility. Same with the base, you know, baseball's changed, you know, and the game ever evolving, which is great because it's fun to learn, if you ask me. But I stay in my lane a lot with it. That's why it's worked out so good that I've met Bob with all the pitching and stuff like that, because that's something I knew nothing about, and I still don't know that much about. I'll listen and try and learn, but as far as for the academy, I still don't know much about pitching, but I know who I want pitching for me. You know, so I let the guys do the work, so.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then I had one other question, I guess. Usually, I'm the only one that did not play professionally whenever mm-hmm. we do these. So I know when I was doing interviews for coaching positions and, you know, go down to spring training and you get your locker and it says like your name and you got the stuff in there. So when you got the job, and obviously you got your Dodgers stuff, and mm-hmm. not being able to continue to pursue your own baseball career, like what did that feel? Did it feel like kind of a dream come true?
It still did. I mean, actually my first year. So when I was with Tampa, I would volunteer to do anything because I had the college, you know, a little bit of baseball background before the injury, but I would end up catching like the rehabbers, and so I would catch their bullpens. And then when I went to the Dodgers, the word got out that I did that, and our bullpen coach at the time just went from the interim manager to the bullpen coach. His name was Glenn Hoffman. It was Trevor's older brother, and he asked me if I'd come down and catch when they had two guys up. You know, because we only had one bullpen catcher, and usually the bullpen coach always could do it, you know. But he didn't want to do it, you know, and I said, sure. So, you know, I was uniformed and got to do that for my first year. I didn't particularly love it because I wasn't even a catcher coming up, and you know, so.
It's not fun.
But I guess I was good enough to knock it down and chuck it back.
So, you didn't get hurt.
No, I didn't, luckily.
Awesome.
So would you go full gear or just face mask? And
no, I put it all on. I couldn't believe guys could actually hit it. You know, when I was receiving it. Like I said, I wasn't a catcher coming up. I was an infielder. But I did that for my first year in 99. And then, luckily, they moved Glenn to third base coach. And then Rick Dempsey came, and you know, Rick was a former, I think, all-star catcher for years. So I just was able to just sit on the bench and
say good job, guys.
put my pom-poms on during the game. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that's probably awesome. A little better though.
When you weren't very comfortable. So
I mean, you had some dudes on those staffs. I mean, like I know you were catching the bullpen guys, but that was during like Eric Gagne's like crazy.
Yeah, Gags came. Gosh, I think maybe 99, he had a couple starts. He was a starter. And then 2000. I think he went, I think 01. I'm not sure. Maybe it was, I think 01 or 02, finally. You know, he kind of was up and down. And I remember that Jim Tracy was the skipper, the manager then. And we didn't have a set closer. And I remember in spring training, he said, we're going to do it by committee. Gags came in spring training, and he was just blowing people away. Since he wasn't starting anymore, they just moved him. And about 2 weeks in the season, everybody just started calling him committee. Because he was only going to get the ball, you know. And
he had something crazy. It was like 70 straight saves or something.
84.
84, there you go. Sorry, 84. My bad, Eric.
That, I know it well because I got to watch them all. It's amazing. It was parts of... I think, I don't know the exact stats, but they were really similar. It's like 50, 52 for 52 1 year, and then I know he had 55 the next, but.
Well, he was a reliever that won a Cy Young, and that is extremely rare.
Extremely.
It was basically when he went in, it was just done. It was over.
Yeah, it's game over. And in fact, they used to, the whole outfield would be lit up with game over, and Welcome to the Jungle came on, he'd come in, and. And it was, if you look at his stats, it was completely dominant.
Yeah, the year he won the Cy Young, he had a 1-2 ERA, 55 saves, 82 innings, and then 137 strikeouts.
And I think the 2 years around it, the numbers are pretty much the same.
Pretty much the same.
You know, it was, It was
amazing. They had that iconic at-bat against Barry Bonds. Yeah. Barry took him yard, but it was like just 100-mile-an-hour challenge heaters, like four in a row.
Yeah.
Power arm, power bat, let's go.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It was really, yeah, that's one of my favorite at-bats to watch.
And I knew kind of the backstory because we'd go over to, back then there wasn't two weight rooms all the time. No, so when we were in San Francisco there at Pac Bell, we'd have to go over to their weight room. And then, you know, Barry might be in there, and they start talking trash to each other. It really is Barry talking trash to Eric, and Eric respectfully just kind of saying, you know.
He's like the best player. So he,
and so I think he talked about it right in front of me a couple times, like he just challenged me, and he's like, yeah, not no same situation, though. Like, and then I think when they went to Japan, they might have settled it, but I knew it was going to happen if the game ever got like that. The next time, because Gags and I are really tight, and I knew when Eric said it, he'd do it.
I think I saw something on the backstory of that where it was like Barry basically, they were kind of going back and forth, and he was like, I'll throw one breaking ball. And so Barry Bonds was talking about how like he threw the breaking ball, so he knew the heater was coming, and that's why it was like four in a row.
He said just challenge me, and he said he would. He goes like, I get one off speed, you know. From watching him for years, if he threw his changeup, he would have struck him out. But you know, but he didn't. You know, he went at him, and Barry did. Barry did to everybody. You know, so
he's very good at what he
did. I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but I specifically remember during Barry Bonds' 72 home run season, my dad took me and my brother to Kauffman to watch. And Barry Bonds hit a home run, and everybody started cheering. And I remember I was like, why is everybody cheering? And my dad's like, everybody wants to see Barry Bonds hit a home run, which was true. It's 100% true during that year.
Yeah, I didn't. I got to see a whole bunch of them. I was in our division, and it seemed like he was hitting one a game or two a game. Yeah, you know, like he just
pretty much.
Basically, you walked him, or he hit it in the water.
And he had a 690 OBP in the big leagues, which is what you should have on a slow pitch softball team.
Right. Yeah. He was playing a video game.
Yeah, he was.
It's incredible.
Yeah. But I mean, that was, he was crazy. But yeah, I think one thing I was going to also ask is like, as you're going up through the ranks, you know, your first couple years with the Rays, I know you said you were kind of like volunteering for stuff, and your wife obviously helped support you.
My first year I went, I was an internship, and I made $1,000 a month for the season, so the six-month season, and then there was no guarantee that we were going to get the job. And I remember I asked Ken before I went, I said, all right, there's six interns. There was one at each affiliate, and I said, will the best one get the job if you go to the big leagues? And he said, no, the best person he could find anywhere. And
at least he was honest.
He was honest, and then what was really cool, he chose me. He didn't have somebody already in his back pocket that he was thinking he was going to hire or anything. He let us all go. And Phil Falco was one of them. He's, I think, still in the league with either the Royals or the Braves. Anyway, I ran basically Ken's program with Tampa. And then when I got the big league job for the Dodgers, I kind of took that over to LA, and then with adding some stuff. And then I got really lucky because I hired a bunch of guys, and those guys were really good. And then they ended up being big league strength coaches. Like a lot of my guys that I brought or hired over the years. Tim Buss is still in the league. He's legendary. Bussy, he's with the Angels now, but he's with the Cubs for, I don't know, maybe 20 years. And then Chris Milfield went to the Royals. He was a major league guy there for a short time. A guy named Chris Sabonia was, I think, the minor league coordinator for the Royals. Doug Jarrow ended up, he was the minor league coordinator for the Dodgers, and then ended up going to the big leagues after I left. After I had resigned, he took over there, and then he went to the Cubs. Now my nephew, he was in the big leagues through the Cubs.
That's cool.
And now he's still in baseball. He's working for the Angels. So.
Yeah, and I think the main thing, because we've talked about it a little bit, but like, if you want to get into coaching or anything like that, you have to be prepared to basically not make money for a few years. Like, yeah. I mean, my first junior college coaching job, I got a $7,000 stipend for the year. So yeah. It was the same thing. And yeah. I was working two jobs. It was in the morning from like 6 to 11, going to the field, working with hitters, doing practice, going to the weight room, running weights, going to bed, doing it again. Yeah. And so it was just, it's a lot. And so if you want to do it, you got to kind of commit.
Yeah, and I got lucky because I got a full-time coordinator's job after year one. So I didn't have to put in as much time as a lot of awesome guys do, you know, and there happened to be some openings.
Well, it sounded like you created your luck, though, Tom.
Yeah,
I appreciate you saying that. But anyway, so yeah, it worked out good. And I loved my time in L.A. I loved my job there. I had great people. I'm still good friends with a lot of the guys, the teammates, and I keep in touch with them. Alex will be coming to Kansas City here in 2 weeks, and I'll probably get together with him. I usually, you know, keep in touch with DR over with the Dodgers. You know, shoot him a text, congratulations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But great friends. And I'm still real close with him. I'm actually going to see him this week.
We'll have Gagne sightings every once in a while.
Yeah. So he comes to town to visit and bring by the facility and stuff. He's like a little brother to me. And Paul Quantrill, who works for the Blue Jays and does something with the pitching. But he's like a big brother to me, and we get together every year. His son pitches for the Marlins right now. So some of my... A couple of them are my best friends in the world, you know, that I've ever had, along with some guys from college and that I've met that were really tight. But
I guess before we kind of move on to like your opening of a facility, kind of like Bob, but a couple questions I had is just we kind of touched on the coaching side, like especially when you're working with guys like, you know, like we talked about Kevin Brown. Like I'm assuming that was towards the end of his career, right? Or was it the beginning?
That was one of his last stops was through us. Yeah, that was his big 99. He came in the first year we came in together.
Yeah.
He was the big signing, not me.
Nobody was writing in the paper about the first, you know, strength.
No, they got overlooked somehow.
Which, kids, if you don't know, like Kevin Brown was very good.
Yes. He was
so you should go look at him. I know you mentioned Hoffman, his brother, being there, but like he's talking about Trevor Hoffman, who is second all-time in saves. Also check him out. Disgusting changeup. But yeah, I mean, these are a lot of these players that you're talking about are like right in the middle of my falling in love with baseball stage, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was born in 92, so like 04, 05, like I specifically remember like these teams. Paul Aduca, one of my favorite players growing up. I always drafted him on MVP 05.
Yes,
so that's great player on that game. But anyways, like one question I kind of had is like when you're dealing with these older guys, obviously sometimes there's guys that are going to be difficult, you know, whether you're me, you know, I work on the hitting side and the strength side. So you're going to have guys that it's like, hey, I don't like switching things up. Like I want to do these things every month. Like when I lift, and obviously like I have to step and be like, hey, we have to have like some variety. We can't just, you know, back squat 7 months in a row. So, we're going to have some variety, but Will, but you get some guys like, you know, where you have to kind of like start making concessions and things like that. So maybe you can kind of talk about like you get a guy, I don't know whoever it may be, but I'm sure you've had that first year you had a moment where it's like, I have this guy and it is the worst, you know, working with him. And so like how you kind of navigated that situation and like some stuff that you took along the way where it's like, okay, that one situation like really, you know, prepared me for the future.
Yeah. I wouldn't say anybody was the worst.
Yeah.
Like, they might not have did what I wanted them to, but like that was their career.
Exactly.
You know, so Jeff Shaw was our closer the first year, and he basically told me, he's like, oh, I work out really hard in off season and I do nothing all year. Nothing. You know, and he plays catch and then he closes games. You know, that's what I do. And so that's what he did. And then eventually he started, you know, running some sprints with the rest of the relievers that I would be running, you know, but it took him a little, And Brownie was, he wasn't easy at first.
Yeah.
You know, he had his own routine and it was working. He just had won a World Series with the Marlins and took San Diego to the World Series and lost the next, in 98, I think. So 2 years in a row, he went from the Marlins to Padres, and then we got him, and I think he might have led the league in ERA. He was filthy, he'd come in, and he was actually, I will say, he was the first guy I knew that he'd work out in bare feet. So I was like thinking, gosh, now I get it. Yeah. But back then, I didn't know better. You know, one of your questions, I was like, this hillbilly is not wearing his shoes.
Well,
I
mean, it was like obviously prevalent in lifting, like when I was, running stuff either high school or the college I was at. But, at the junior college that we had a lot of Japanese players and they would hit without their shoes on. And I was like, that's kind of, you can do that, but whenever we start throwing like BP and hitting up the machine, please put your shoes on. I can't justify you breaking your foot over this. But that's something that's kind of prevalent now. Like you see guys do that in the cage and it's all about, feeling the ground and there's a lot of data that supports that kind of stuff now with lifting and doing things like with how shoes kind of like warp your feet. It's just kind of interesting. Like, you see something like, I don't know about that. Kind of like what you're saying, this hillbilly, with shoes on. Now you're like, well, everybody probably should be.
Yeah, I probably should have listened more to Brian. But I will say, when I said it wasn't easy with him at the beginning, Brownie and I ended up being really good buddies and teammates. Like, some guys were more of a challenge and took longer.
Yeah.
But everybody was great. They cared about their career, and I cared about their career also. And I didn't want to be the one screwing things up. And I will say, back then, man, I had to be careful, because if somebody got hurt in my weight room, I don't know if I'd have a job the next day. So that it was one thing if they on the field, and whether it was soft tissue stuff, and some people might, but if it happened in the weight room with as old school stuff was then, it would have been, my head would have rolled.
It's funny because like now it's like, if you're lifting weights, like there is obviously just a baseline level of injury risk with anything. But back then it was like viewed as like an accessory, like, and if you're getting hurt in there, then we're just not going to do it at all anymore. Right. Sorry, see you later. Whereas like now it's very much viewed as like a necessity.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's required to do it, and everybody understands how important it is in season, off season, like no matter where you are in your season, in your year, like everybody understands how important it is. But when I was growing up, a lot of people, it was just like, baseball players, they don't really lift. That's like a football thing. Even when I was like in middle school.
Right.
And now, it's totally different. Totally different. So it's really interesting. Bob, was that a big deal whenever you were playing? Because you're a little older than me.
I lifted my first weight in college and was like, what are we doing? It was all football lifts.
Power cleans. We did a lot of power cleans when I was in college. Yeah. A lot.
I mean, pitchers do incline bench instead of flat bench.
Yeah.
And that was the one variation.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we got it specified for baseball.
Yeah.
Pitchers incline.
Yeah.
And then do your hand cleans.
Even though.
And then your back squats. All right, we're going to do the same thing again on Friday, so we'll see you guys.
Exactly.
But, I feel like I saw a slow evolution during my playing career of, meathead power to, some sort of function. I mean, you do need power, you do need strength, but there's a lot of other things that go into it, especially, for individuals' needs.
Needs
the same thing.
The higher up you go, because most of these guys are baseline strong enough, especially now with just how guys are lifting super early. You have a academy, guys are lifting super young now. I mean, we have not as many, but I mean, we have kids as young as 10, and obviously you're just trying to I always say when they're that young, you're just trying to get them to fall in love with it. So you're doing a lot of jumping and just baseline movements where they can want to come back. I'm sure it's the same on the pitching side, hitting side. Like when I used to do younger kids lessons, it's like I want them to come back. Like I want them to love the thing that I love. But you're just getting these guys that are horses. We see them lifting here all off season, and so it's like, okay, they don't actually need to get stronger. Will, you need to learn how to move quicker, and we need to be able to get into good position, and you're starting to do that. And so I kind of go back on what you're saying, Bob. I look back when I was first started at the club I was working at, me and my buddy ran the strength and conditioning. I felt like we were just trying to crush them every single time I walked in. It's like, we're going to make you really tired, and we're going to lift as much as we can all the time. But you know, 22, 23. That's just how I worked out, you know, at the time. And, you know, I don't think it was bad for them, kind of like what you were saying. Like, they're young, and they just need to get stronger. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now you get a guy like, you know, some of these pro guys over, it's like 28, 29, 30. It's like, that's not nearly as high on the, you know, ladder that we need to attack. And it's kind of what you were saying. It's like, can we make all 30 of our starts? If you're a position player, can we play 140 games, 150 games? Like, that's kind of where your mindset has to shift. And it's like, you got this 3-month window where you can really, like, get them stronger and faster. And then after that, it's like, okay, we're in season, and we've got to really prioritize playing. And that's kind of where that goes. But after you get done with the Dodgers, what kind of made you want to start your own academy? Or so what kind of went into that transition?
So what went into the transition is I got an awesome wife and two kids, and our oldest, McCray, they always used to be with me wherever I was. But once he started kindergarten, then, you know, so they'd go with me to Vero Beach for spring training, and then they would go with me to LA for the summer, and then in the off season we'd be together wherever we were living. Then once he started kindergarten, they couldn't come down for spring training except for, you know, the week where he was off for spring break, and then, you know, he had to leave by, you know, beginning of mid-August, so they'd leave me in LA, and I loved what I did. It was my dream job, but I also knew that I either had to be a lifer or figure out something else so that I wasn't away from Jen and Mac and Ella. And so I decided to resign and kind of do my own thing right there, and I was training some, you know, some baseball guys, like Gagne, Edwin Jackson would work with me.
Edwin Jackson played for every team.
Edwin's awesome. Russell Martin was coming up, and he was tight with Gags because they're both French Canadians, so we included him with the workouts.
He was an awesome player for a long time.
Awesome guy. And then I worked with youth and stuff like that. And my son played hockey. So I was working with a lot of youth hockey kids, but I also watched the guy who was running like hockey academy, and I watched him mentor kids. I really liked the guy. I liked what he stood for. And so as I was trying to figure out what to do, like everybody when they get out of baseball, either you go do something else, which sounds horrible, or you figure something out, wanted to try and start a baseball academy. And we were living in Phoenix at the time. And, my wife Jennifer is from Lee Summit, you know, right here in the Kansas City area, and she kind of followed me around moving, you know, with pro ball and stuff. I said, let's try it there. Kind of been lucky with that too. It's just gone good. Started that in 2013.
Okay.
So we're going on, I think this is, you know, 12 or 13 coming up. Yeah.
So with your experience like coaching at the major league level, and then like you said, seeing a lot of these players that are managers, and then obviously being close with the big league staff, the minor league staff, like the positional or the managers, I'm assuming as the owner of the academy, you hire coaches. So what are some of those qualities that you said you noticed with those guys, and what are some things that I guess are like must-haves for the people that are going to coach your teams?
Yeah, I got lucky right away. My first year, I kind of told a few people that I'd known through college. A real good friend of mine, Greg Locke, and another really good friend of mine, two of my best friends in the world, Mark Tatum, that I was coming here and going to start this thing, and they thought it would be a good idea, so I said, good, you're coaching with me. They're both good leaders. Both played sports in college, and then I had some other guys through Greg and Mark that played college sports, so they're more leaders. You know, a lot, there were some football guys, you know, some guys played baseball, and so our original year, I think we had 7 teams, and we just did team stuff. It was all team, and I think all of the head coaches played college sport, whether it was football or baseball or golf. And they were just great. They were great dads, great leaders, and it just we had fun, just like I did with, you know, and with everybody back in pro ball. It's just now we're having fun with the coaches and the kids. And so then it started to snowball. And, you know, we did that for, and Gagne and Quantrill actually came down and ran some clinics for me. And Dave Silvestri, who, he was a gold medal shortstop, and he went to Mizzou, and he's, I think, SEC legend, and he was a big league shortstop for the Yankees and several teams. He came and said he'd help, you know, and we'd help with tryouts and then kind of come. And then and actually Sly still, he lives in St. Louis, but he comes up and kind of coaches our top teams awesome. Every year. And, and
he brings passion.
He brings passion. He's kind of like our Tommy Lasorda. He just leads baseball. And anybody who played with Sly, they love him. Anybody played against him, maybe not. But that's because he played real hard. But
I've only met him a couple times, and like he's just like a gravitating figure. Like you just want to listen to him and like stand next to him. Like his energy is so awesome.
It comes out as pores. And it's, if you love baseball, you fall in love with him. Somebody said a parent, because I mean he gets after it a little bit. And but somebody said he's got a way of being so demanding without being demeaning. Yeah. And that's kind of, I was like, gosh, he does have that skill. Sly managed in the minor leagues, besides being a great player. He was on the fast track. I'm sure he would have managed in the big leagues. But a situation happened with his family that called him to do something else. But he did get his baseball fix. I do believe we have the best 17 skipper in the nation, if you ask me. He's so overqualified, but he's willing to do it, you know? And so I'm like, okay. And
can't say no.
So he was great to help get it going. And then we had some pitchers that would play for me, and they were getting better. And we were really lacking in the pitching area because we didn't have like a pitching guy. I hadn't found one. And there was a bunch of my kids started getting really good, you know, and I was like, hey, so, you know, what are you doing? And they're, you know, some guys would go do lessons, and I encourage people to go do lessons wherever you want. You know, I don't have an ego. There's a lot of people who know what they're doing around here, you know, in baseball. And go learn from whoever. Make yourself the best player you can. And
I think that's kind of the pro background that you have, though, because, like, a lot of guys at that level kind of have somebody they trust that they're always going to go back to. And I think whenever obviously these are like very general comments that we make, but like you get to like different college coaches, different high school coaches, they get very like offended if you're going to somebody else. Yeah. And I think that's something like, I mean, I've been there too. Like, why would you, you know, do that whenever, you know, I'm right here? And it's like, well, you know, they might be saying something, or maybe it's somebody they've been to for like 6 years, 7 years, and it's just somebody they trust. Right. And I think that's what it comes down to. And you have to realize, like, kind of what you're saying, like, you have to put your own ego away. You know, because you're maybe that guy for somebody else, you know, and so you can't have it both ways. You can't get offended if you're doing that for somebody and get mad if they're going somewhere else.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so a bunch of our kids were getting a lot better, and I asked them, hey, going to see somebody? They say, yeah. And they said they're going over to Premier, and I didn't know anything about Premier, but figured I better go meet this guy who's, you know, making these kids so much better. And my godson, who happened to play in the academy, Ben Locke, had a private lesson with Bob. And so I just kind of came over and sat in a chair and watched. And I just remember how engaged, you know, I didn't really know what Bob's talking about. Just like I said, I've never touched the whole pitching thing. But I could tell he was making sure he clarified, like, checked for, do you understand what I'm saying? And he was just such a good teacher. He was so engaged in his lesson that after, I just went to shake his hand. And I didn't want somebody to say, well, the inside edge guy was in here, like, just poking around. I was coming to just say thank you. And I watched. And then I think Bob said, oh, you're the inside edge guy? I'm like, yeah, go grab a cup of coffee or something, and then we got together, and I think we have like minds as far as what we want for, you know, athletes. So it's been great, because all of a sudden now we weren't just moving position players. Now, you know, people are looking at the edge for
pitchers.
A lot of pitchers, yeah, a lot of pitchers. And so it's just been great. And then we've expanded, and now, you know, Bob brings his program over to Lee Summit and the pitching program, and it's been great. And the kids really do improve from it, so, yeah.
We were kind of talking about this in the winter, you know, and you touched on it, but there's a lot of guys that know what they're talking about, and I'm sure you can weigh in on this just about being in these big league locker rooms, but like the atmosphere matters so much, and like just the vibe the place has, because you know, there's so many people that know a lot about whatever sport it may be, and so like the environment that you set is so important to want guys to want to come back and want feel like they can get better, but in a space where like it really promotes that, and they're not, you know, getting intimidated by other people or feel self-conscious about like, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to look terrible. You know, in front of all the, and so I think just the environment of getting better and feeling like just a place that you can kind of like call home for a couple hours. So whether you're doing the pitching program or lifting or, you know, hit whatever it is that you're doing, going to a shooting coach for basketball, like I don't really care, but like I think that is so important, just because if a player, if the athlete feels like that, then they're going to get better. They're going to get better.
Yeah, and you know, getting Bob, and then go back to what you were saying as far as hiring guys or like inviting people. Our coaching staff is just, we got good, we want good character kids. That's what Inside Edge basically is. Some of them are really good baseball players, some of them are okay baseball players, but we got good kids. And that's really important. Their character is a big deal. And then we brought in Matt Carpenter, who, you know, he's from, he's the head coach at Avila. He is great. Character guy, great baseball guy. Noah Briley, who Bob introduced to me because he ran the pitching program, now has partnered with me and does an amazing job at making sure that the academy keeps getting better and better and better. And then we got Keaton Ashby, a full-time staff guy. He pitched at Avila, helps with pitching. We got Jaden Zimmerman, who was a, you know, a guy who coaches for me, who was an ex-college player, said, hey, from Benedictine, and said this is a great kid, and he's captain and he's a catcher. As soon as if you say captain, and that's what I'm looking for as far as guys. And then Joe Todd, found Joe, they had played together, and he is great, handles pitching. And then we have some other guys at Bob from time to time. And Zach Mattson comes over, he's a pro guy and helps. Mm-hmm. But we have a bunch of volunteer like coaches for the youth that do a great job along with our staff, and I think kids have a really good experience. That's a big deal, and we just try to see the bigger picture, you know, not every weekend, not too high or too low, however it goes, and kind of steady and care about the kids, and but kind of keep the parents and the expectations that, hey, I always say, like, every kid that plays for us is going to screw up, and all our coaches are going to screw up, and basically Inside Edge is just a bunch of screw-ups. But you're allowed that. I don't think you can play really good if you fear of making mistakes. So I try to let the kids play with all out. And when they screw something up, it's okay. If they throw the ball in the right field, somebody will go get it. They'll survive. And just try to see the bigger pictures for the kids, as long as they're having fun and getting better every day. When I used to say that fun word, I think some people didn't think I was going to be competitive enough with it, but I take it real seriously. I just believe if you're not having fun, you're never going to be great. But
there's a difference, like kind of what you're saying, demanding and demeaning, right? Yeah. Like you can be, like, you can do things to win games, but not just crush liking baseball out of the
right.
kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, and we've all seen that. Like, coaching a club for a while, and you look at some of these, you know, some of the parents are just like, whoa, like, they're going to hate this in the next year. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to hate it. And you go to different games and you see different I remember we were at a perfect game tournament down in Georgia, and this coach, 16-year-old, I don't even remember where, I don't remember what state they were from or whatever, it wasn't from the Kansas City area, but I mean, he was just going one by one of each kid about how they messed up and why they lost the game. And then we played another team where every time a kid made an error, coach would call time and pull the kid off the field and put a different kid out there. That was wild. That was really wild.
That's not going on in our academy, you know, and if it did, we'd take care of it pretty fast, because that's not good for anybody. Noah Briley does an amazing job of kind of, he and I see eye to eye on a lot. We talk every day. he's doing a lot of the boots on the ground for me now as a aging and he's, as far as leadership, he does a great job and caring about the person. Same as the big leagues or
10-year-old, yeah.
10-year-old, whatever, A ball, double A, whatever, triple A or whatever. It's, if you care, I think a player can obviously recognize whether you care or not. And if you care, you can get away with a lot of mistakes on your own part. And the parents will trust you with their children. And I know as a parent, that's a big deal. So coaching is really important, and character is really important to us. So
it's awesome. Well, I think that's a good message to kind of end on. And we really appreciate you coming in. And it was nice to meet you. I know Bob always goes up there on Tuesdays. So don't see him around here, but I never got an opportunity to meet you. So it was good to meet you. And obviously we wish you continued success and everything you're doing.
And this was the best podcast you've ever been on.
This is, you want to be on one. This one, yeah.
You've been on too many to count, this is
good. Right. Rogan wasn't near the school. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate all you guys.
Great. Well, that was good way to open up season two. Like and subscribe, and wherever you're listening, have a great rest of your day.